doesn't work. Rise up, O flame, by thy light glowing, show to us beauty, vision, and joy. Rise up, O flame, by thy light glowing, show to us beauty, vision, and joy. Rise up, O flame, by thy light glowing, show to us beauty, vision, and joy. Rise up, O flame, by thy light glowing, show to us beauty, vision, and joy. Rise up, O flame.
Hal, could you do the honors of lighting the chalice? To live in this world, you must be able to do three things. To love what is mortal, to hold it close against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it. And when it comes time to let it go, to let it go. I invite you to rise in body or spirit, joining in our first group song, When Your Heart Is in a Holy Place. The words will be up. If the choir doesn't know it, you can turn around.
When our heart is in a holy place,
So when I was about 7 years old, my mom finished her bachelor's of music down in the southland of the state where I lived in called California. Woo-hoo. Shout out for California. Woo-hoo. We were from the north. And so mom did as much as she could to do the whole, I know it's incredible to imagine, but this is before the internet. It was before computers. At least a computer that could fit in anybody's house. And so we were up north while she had to do one semester of residence. Now, mom never said that she was a housewife. She told us, always say that your mom is a homemaker. So all the other time, she was always at home, except for these few months. And so when we got to go back down to the Southland to meet with her, because our school was over, even though hers was continuing through the summer, when we got there, I was so excited to see her, and my other sisters were so excited to see her, and when we got there, she started to cry. And I thought, well, I'm happy to see you. I was confused. Because I thought she would be happy to see us. And I had to ask, I actually honestly forget who it was, but it was some adult, and it wasn't my father, and it was my mother, said, why is mom crying? And the person said, because she's so happy to see you. Crying, happy, happy, crying. And I have since had this experience. But one of the things that you need to know about change, because you know, this is a big change for her life, is that it's not always a happy thing. In fact, a lot of times it's not a happy thing. And in fact, all change on some level includes loss. And all loss on some level includes a little mourning. Not like a sunrising mourning, but a little like sad that you lost something, mourning. And that however you are with the changes that are going on, it really, really is okay to cry. That's part of what it means to be human. That's part of what it means to be fully, authentically, deeply human. It's okay to cry.
Thank I'd like to welcome my parents to their first SI ever. My dad actually wants to be the theme speaker next year. No, he just learned that for the first time, actually. He would be a good one, though. He really would. But I'm here this morning to tell them and you a story about change. The story begins in the rawness of the present moment. Just about 2 weeks ago, my 4-year relationship with best friend and lover Isabel came to an end. I won't go into details about how this came about, but I will say that Isabel is a beautiful, kind, loving, gentle, and creative soul, and I'm grieving the loss of our love. Our relationship was not without its challenges, but I got real used to having her in my life, and it's been a rough change. Fortunately, for the past several weeks, I've been in daily contact with my awesome sister, Johanna, with whom I share the middle position among our siblings of 4. Johanna's been introducing me to the world of co-counseling, or reevaluation counseling. We set a timer and each take a turn listening, holding each other's complete goodness in our delighted attention. As a culture, when we were little, the well-meaning adults around us figured that when you make the crying or the tantrum stop, you make the hurt go away. In fact, according to RC theory, it's the crying, it's the tantrums that heal. As children, we didn't get a chance to cry in the presence of loving attention. So we get to do that now. In reevaluation counseling, we call it discharge. Discharge can show up as crying, laughing, shaking, yawning, or expressing anger. The thought is that after we discharge, we get a new perspective on reality. We're able to appropriately differentiate between the hurts of the past and present time reality. By discharging emotion, we reclaim our full humanity. Yesterday morning, at the end of our brief phone session, I had one more thought to share with Johanna. I said, "Johanna, my life seems so much more difficult than a lot of people." Hearing the words come out of my mouth made me laugh. Johanna started laughing too. We didn't need to say why we were laughing. She and I have a special understanding. Having postponed writing this sermon till the last possible moment, it was this laughter that inspired me to go back to my room and start writing. I was born into a life of privilege and love and stability with 3 great sisters, a super smart dad and a super creative mom, and grandparents that lived well into their late 90s. But on my life journeys, I've experienced 5 fairly traumatic life-altering events. Not to dramatize the recent breakup, but one of these big changes happened just about 2 weeks ago. These have been significant turning points on the path of my particular life. Looking at photographs of myself, I can clearly say, "Ah, yes, that was taken before that pivotal event." Or, "Oh, yes, that was taken right after that life-changing experience." I'd like to share the story of a few of these milestones of change. In the spin cycle of grief that I've been immersed in recently, I don't have much perspective on the whole thing. I don't have a tie or a bow or a lesson to wrap it all up for you. But I do have a story of one sensitive soul on this earth trying to navigate the sometimes harsh realities of living in a human body. In my early 20s, I was a long-distance runner and a cross-country cyclist. I was a skinny guy with tremendous strength and unending endurance. When I got a summer job as a counselor at farm and wilderness camps in Vermont, without question, I packed up my bicycle and I pedaled to the job. My religion happened on the frisbee field, dancing with the disc and soaring with the wind. Inside my body, I carried a profound intuition about how to make that disc go exactly where I wanted it to go, and it felt like a dance. I could run that field all day long and never get tired. In 1992, after experiencing 2 weeks of overwhelming stress from lack of information around an HIV test, one morning I woke up with strange symptoms of flu-like fatigue. On one day, I could run 6 miles and conjure up serotonin prayers to the gods and the soaring birds. And on the very next day, I couldn't run across the street without needing to lie down from dizziness and exhaustion. As months and years passed with no improvement and no help from the medical world, I became a high-functioning master of managing chronic fatigue, always scoping the terrain for a place on the floor to have a 10-minute lie down. For lack of a better label, I've identified myself as one of the million people in the country living with chronic fatigue syndrome. This sudden onset was a life-changing experience. Suddenly, I was facing a new reality. Here I was at the age of 22, entering the world of chronic illness. No information, very little support, totally unexpected, and a complete mystery. The spiritual practice of pedaling bicycle trails until the flow kicked in was no longer available to me. Though I continued a slower dance on the frisbee field, my strength and endurance were prematurely cut short. Now, before you start prescribing me with your theories of diet, exercise, supplements, and antidepressants, please know that I appreciate your thoughts. I've been there and I've done that, and it's really not the point of this sermon. The point actually has not yet revealed itself. Possibly it will by the end. Well, years passed and lots of changes happened. I got married, became the father of a beautiful daughter named Hallie, got divorced, experienced a dark night of the soul in Bangkok, Thailand, laid in bed for 3 months, and with a lot of help, I pulled myself out of the depths in gradual search of a new normal. I fielded questions from all the normal, healthy people. What did they ever find out was wrong with you after Thailand? Was it typhoid fever? For all those that are still wondering, here's the answer. Whoever they are didn't find out anything. And as far as I'm concerned, they are basically clueless in the subtle, complex world of the mind, the body, and the spirit. Man, don't get me started about all the visits to the doctor. The next chapter in my life was a good one. Inspired by the depths of post-Thailand, I was taking strong steps on a path of recovery from isolation, fatigue, and addiction. I was reaching out, expanding my circle, and finding energy there. I wrote the song within an opening circle. My family is extending beyond my comprehension. Every person that's before me is the one that I'm befriending. As a circle grows, I am not alone, and I know I'm only one among the many. And I become the light, light as a feather, and I am only part of a love that lasts forever. I'm holding out my hand for my brothers and my sisters. I'm walking on this land, and it's turning into heaven. I am reaching out in peace. I am reaching out in peace. I am reaching out in peace within an opening circle. I was at the height of my musical career. I was booking well-paying gigs all around the region. I finally got a website and finished a CD. And then I met this really awesome, easygoing woman, Isabel. She joined our church, and we got along really well. I fell in love. One of our first phone conversations was me telling my story of chronic fatigue. I think it comes as a surprise to most people that I have a history of chronic illness. Except for an occasional sermon about it, I don't often talk about it. I'm tall and skinny, I'm a good dresser, and I have a big smile. And when I get on stage, the adrenaline really knows how to kick in. But I needed Isabel to know early on that my body is quite different than normal healthy people. I needed to share a difficult reality that spending time with me can sometimes resemble spending time with my 88-year-old father. In 2013, Isabel supported me through 3 months of debilitating jaw pain. I almost canceled my late February trip to Hawaii, but at the last minute, I invested in a very expensive TMJ brace that gave me some support, and I headed off for the island. At the end of a week of painful chewing and inspired harmonica teaching, four of us traveled down the side of a cliff by Ben Stiller's mansion on our way to the black lava rocks of Kauai. JP would introduce us to the power of the dragon's spout. It was on that steep decline to the ocean that I experienced a release in my jaw. For the first time in months, I thought for a moment that maybe I wouldn't spend the rest of my life in agonizing pain. I looked out at the ocean with friends and felt peace. I was preparing for an awesome Facebook post about the freedom I felt overlooking the powerful force of the ocean, watching it crash beneath the lava bridge upon which we stood and explode into a turbulent pool of wild energy. Suddenly, out of the blue, with no warning and my back to the sea, a rogue wave crashed over the bridge, and with the full force of the great Pacific Ocean, devoured my body and threw me and my friend Ash into the belly of the dragon. With no warning, I was underwater, not knowing when my next breath would be. I was being pulled by the river of undercurrent that retreats back to the ocean just as powerfully as it came in. In disbelief, I experienced a terrifying and sudden reality shift. Underwater, I realized that I was about to die. I realized that this ocean has no care that I'm Hal Walker, and that I've got a daughter and a girlfriend waiting for me at home, and I've got to direct SI Choir 2013 that summer. When I finally surfaced, I realized that in the tumultuous winter sea, my swimming would make no difference. I looked out at the vast ocean and had a dark, terrifying sense that it was over for me. Eventually, there was a slight calm, and with the strength of a feather, I stripped off my shoes and my pants, and I began fighting for my life. With the help of a well-timed wave and a 6-foot stick that my buddy had picked up on the way down the hill, my longtime friend J.P. Allen saved my life. Our new friend Ash, who had been standing next to me and so full of life during that week-long harmonica retreat, did not survive, and his body was never recovered. I was life-flighted to the local hospital, where I recall the sweet words of a Hawaiian nurse there. I'll never forget how she whispered to me, "You're very lucky." Yes, I was very lucky, but I came out of that water and was greeted by a profound worsening of physical symptoms. For the last year, it's been quite difficult living in this particular body. At first, I experienced shortness and pain in breathing, which turned into the sudden onset of psoriatic arthritis, an autoimmune condition related to psoriasis, which left me requesting a 2-month leave of absence from my church job and once again grieving the loss of health. It was at SI last year during my leave of absence that I realized that I could no longer be a one-man show at the UU Church of Kent. In order to survive, I would need to ask for help from my community. In a remarkable phase of creativity, participation, and musical inspiration, we've witnessed a musical renaissance at the Kent Church. 12 musicians showed up for the first rehearsal of the Fallowtime Folk Orchestra. A new accompanist and 25 singers showed up for a fresh start of our adult choir. And 20 ringers of all ages arrived for our first rehearsal of the Kent UU Tone Chimers. And 10 singing angels showed up to become the Golden Tones of Real Beauty Junior Choir. with frightening burning pain in my hands and difficulty playing the piano and guitar, I bought myself a director's wand and started arranging music for these ensembles. With all this music, more than ever before, the UU Church of Kent has become my home away from home. I've experienced a natural easing of my desire to expand my fan base, increase my newsletters, and travel long distances. I've been making life a little bit smaller and have really enjoyed the feelings of family that are arising at our little growing church in Kent. Isabel has been there with me throughout these struggles, but it's not been easy. My grief and physical discomfort seemed at times more than I can handle and have had a large impact on our relationship. As I stand before you today, the relationship as we knew it has come to an end. For now, I've lost a close friend and I've been grieving, obsessing and grieving. But along the way, I've been making good choices. I've been eating out of my garden 3 meals a day, and I've been reaching out and asking for help. Normally, I go to the Kent Farmers Market on Saturday mornings in search of kale and free-range chicken. But last Saturday, I went in search of hugs, and I found a few. I noticed there are a few people that could use a lesson in how to give a good hug. But I know that I'm the one that needs the lesson. A lesson in loving and accepting people as they are, whether or not they've been trained in giving a good hug. Being in a place of pain and hurt has forced me to break through these walls and to fall into the arms of this healthy community. And it doesn't come naturally. SI has definitely been a good place for me to be this week. At times, I'm like a fragile leaf falling, and I have felt carried and I've felt lifted. I know that I don't have to face these challenges alone. My sister keeps reminding me of that. But when you take away the distractions and the activities and the community and all the good food and the good coffee, each of us is left with nothing but this moment, these particular feelings. And all we can say is, wow. So this is what it feels like to be alive. Life is an amazing journey. It certainly hasn't gone by my plans, but the wow factor has been amazing. I'm grateful that I'm being guided in my grief. I've discovered that my connections are wide, and the people in my life are strong and wise and willing to listen. I don't join things easily. I have a long history of staying just right on the outside. After almost 20 years at the UU Church of Kent, helping to write the Greater UU Songbook, I could almost call myself a Unitarian Universalist. I'm the kind of guy that needs a church that travels to the depths and can soar to the heights of the human experience. I want a church that speaks the sacred language of reverence. I want a church that doesn't avoid uncomfortable feelings and doesn't hide its weaknesses behind sarcasm and feel-good language. I want my church to feel like a big bus and we're on tour playing all the best venues out west. And at moments, that's what I'm finding here. Really, I just want to feel connected. After 18 consecutive summer institutes, I'm glad to say that I've made a few friends. We don't kiss or snuggle, but we laugh, and they've been generously there to listen. And believe it or not, I'm interested in listening. I've so appreciated the way that co-counseling offers the change up in roles, where the counselee becomes the listener. When I listen to Johanna share her deepest feelings and release them, I feel honored. Hearing her grief makes me know that I'm not alone. My dad always said, when you're feeling down, go visit the poor. Go visit the hungry, the sick, and the aging. On hours or days when I've been bedridden myself, my whole world becomes very small and self-centered. How can I do the work that I was put here on earth to do when I'm too weak to make my own breakfast? That's when the big lesson needs to be learned. The lesson that makes most sense to me is to love what is, to say wow to what is, even when it feels uncomfortable, and to take a chance at sharing that wow with the unlikely person standing near you. In my co-counseling sessions, my ever-changing feelings are affirmed. Johanna says that the grieving is the healing, and there's no telling how long it will take. She coaches me and encourages me to say goodbye. Michael straightens me out when my best thinking tells me to hold on. Bullwinkle lets me hang on him and cry like a limp rag. Michelle lets me cry for a long time and she just listens. Kathy embraces me with friendship and kindness. Andy made a pact with me to check with him before I do anything stupid. Melissa asks me, where's God in all this? David encourages me to share my story openly and from the heart. Christy reminds me that love comes in many forms, and Baron offers me big, strong words of recovery. This choir makes such a beautiful sound, the sopranos offer such great intonation, and the altos offer such powerhouses of sound, and the tenors are my favorite. And the basses are rock solid. And my parents drove all the way to Kent this morning just to hear me speak about change. So here's the lesson. Change is gonna come. Yes, it is. Change is gonna come. Yes, it is.
Brother, help me please.
Come, thou font of every blessing. It's a song that has significance to Hal. You will see some words up on the screen that you may not recognize from our gray hymnal because they have significance to his history and his life. You never know where the font is going to come from. It was written as God, divine source, that which is always and everywhere accessible. You don't have to wonder where the font comes from. You don't have to look around. You just need to close your eyes and feel and know that it's there. It's here. Come, thou font. Please rise in body and spirit. Come, thou font of every blessing, to thy heart to sing thy praise, streams of mercy never ceasing, fountain songs of loudest praise. Teach me some melodious sonnet, sung by flaming tongues above. Praise the mountain fixed upon it, out of thy redeeming Closing words are from Anton Saint-Martin. In order to complete our amazing life journey successfully, it is vital that we turn each and every dark tear into a pearl of wisdom and find the blessing in every curse. So may this hour of worship lead us in, lead us to reach out, lead us to reach depths and heights, so that we might turn our tears into pearls and our curses into blessings, and to learn to do so for one another, to be there, to hold them to their journey to find their pearl. May it be so with thee and with me. Amen.
A secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do ya? Well, it goes like this: the fourth and fifth, the minor fall and the major lift. The baffled king composing hallelujah. to her kitchen chair. She broke your throne and she cut your hair.
Good morning. My name is Liz Bright, and I'm a first-year member of the Summer Institute Planning Committee, and I have the pleasure of bringing you announcements this morning, which will be extremely hard to follow since it's been a very, very gifted morning. Today, the youth will be performing at noon at Hale's Gym, and I hope as many of you can go to support them. It's been a transforming week for them as well. The youth overnight is tonight, so those of you that have signed up to be night angels and to be another part of that, please pay attention to your shifts. And there'll be probably some sleepy youth tomorrow. Rock climbing has been canceled for Friday tomorrow night from 6:30 to 8:15. Green cans are for trash. Blue cans are for recycled items, in case anybody has missed that. And also, shoes would be appreciated to be worn in the dining room. East Shore UU Pictures today, 1115 Biggs Hall door, which is in front of Stevenson. 1150, yes. Pink purse lost at the pub last night, Pat Trudeau, Barrows 306, if anybody finds that. I think if you haven't visited the Lost and Found, there are quite a few items there, so please, and some of them are significant, so please. The Lost and Found, Stevenson's, the three doors there. Griswold Center, yeah. So, and it's marked in there. So the staff of the university knows that that's our lost and found.
There's a camera in there too from Renee Rzowski, if anybody borrowed her camera.
Also, photos. If you've taken spectacular photos of people having big wow fun, you may have to send them to Brad Bolton at photos@omdsi.org to be included in the Saturday slideshow. That's again, photos@omd.org. The amazing annual bike ride will be Thursday afternoon on the bike trail that runs through Oberlin. You can ride 28 or 17 miles with the group. Meet on the common side of Burton Hall, ready to depart at 3:15 Thursday. With your bike and helmet, bring water, and in case there's no water on the trail. 16 and over, please. Looks like it's gonna be, a great day. Let's ride. Okay, I think that is it for today. Go in peace.